Looking ahead, challenges and opportunities in the changing world. Welcome to Talking Economics, podcast launched on the occasion of the 30th anniversary of the Center for Economic Research and Graduate Education, Economics Institute. Our podcast subtitle, Challenges and Opportunities in the Changing World, have recently got a new dimension. Now, not only the pandemic, but also the war on Ukraine and massive sanctions and international isolation of Russia are the new challenges that will affect lives of many people, as well as the world economy. In today's podcast, we will have a closer look at the economic sanctions imposed on Russia. What is the difference between the main sanctions applied now in comparison to those from 2014 and 2017? What are the impacts of these sanctions? Let me welcome my guests, Anna Pestova and Michal Mamono. Anna and Michal are both our PhD students at the moment at their research stay at the University of Zurich. In their research, along with other topics, they focus on sanctions on Russia at the macro level, as well as on the financial system. They have published several articles about sanctions for VoxEU, a policy portal of the Center for Economic Policy Research, as well as working papers at CERGI and Bank of Finland Institute for Emerging Economies. Before joining CERGI, both Anna and Michal worked for 10 years in the leading Russian think tank providing macroeconomic and financial policy consulting. Welcome, Anna. Welcome, Michal.
Welcome, everybody. Good morning, Katerina. Thank you for inviting us.
Thank you for having us.
We thank you for joining us and sharing with us your insights about these important topics. I would like to start with your research, because your research started before the war, of course, and before the current sanctions. You published last year a CERGI working paper about macroeconomic effects of sanctions from 2014 and 2017, right? The sanctions related to Crimea. Mm-hmm. Can you briefly summarize these sanctions and their impact?
We started our research on sanctions, trying to estimate the effects of the Crimea-related sanctions of 2014. And what was there is that European countries and the United States, they imposed some restrictions on Russia back in 2014 and in 2015. And we focused in this paper on the financial sanctions. So what we mean by financial sanctions is the restrictions on the new debt issuance at the international financial markets. So Russian debtors, mostly state-related ones, were banks and companies. They were prohibited from raising new debt at the international financial market. So the stock of debt decreased by a quarter in 2 years. Stock of foreign debt of Russian banks and companies. And it was important because the country relied a lot on this model, on the importing capital from the foreign markets, because they were, of course, cheaper. And in the model, we quantify the effects of these restrictions. In the paper, we build a model of the Russian economy, macroeconomic Bayesian vector autoregression model, and identify the shock to the price of this debt by using a structural identification of shocks. And by imposing particular restrictions in the model, we obtain evolution of the shock to so-called country spread, the price of the foreign borrowing for the country, which is applied to all borrowers, government ones, private ones, all banks and non-financial companies. And with this shock and impulse response functions, we obtained that the effect on the economy was rather modest. So from our estimations, we obtain the effects on GDP, on industrial production, on consumption, on many other important macroeconomic variables. And the effect is bounded between -1 to -1.5 percentage points of GDP loss over 2014-2015. And this actually is in line with other papers which estimate the effects of Crimea-related sanctions. So in the literature, the effect is between 0 to 1.5 percentage points. And why this effect is so, let's say, limited is because past sanctions back in 2014, 2015, and 2017, the second wave of Syria-related sanctions and the cyber attacks and the sanctions related to interference to US elections, they were targeted in the first place. So they were, how the literature calls them, smart. So they targeted particular banks or particular non-financial companies or particular oligarchs or people closely related to Kremlin. And they were not targeted they were not targeting the whole economy. And because of their limited scope and because of the different ways to switch the direction of funding and different opportunities to substitute, the final effect was modest, according to our estimates.
Yeah, and let me add a little bit here. What's important in the model, and we were discussing it with many, many people, is that in 2014, for example, the world had witnessed a huge decline of oil prices. And once we control for this decline in oil prices, we have this modest effect. And what is important is that if we would not control for oil price dynamics, the effect of sanctions, what we could quantify, would be not -1 to -1.5, but two or three times larger. So it's quite important to stress.
I think what Mikhail wants to say is that actually Russia faced a quite sizable recession back in 2015. The decline in GDP was between 2 and 3 percentage points, but most of the decline was attributed to the decrease in oil prices, not to sanctions. And of course, in the model, we control for the evolution of the terms of trade of the economy.
Mm-hmm. So more than the sanctions that the West was imposing, the Russia can be harmed by the prices of oil and actually targeting this major component of their economy.
Exactly. And that in a way differs now as compared to back this time, because now, as you know, the prices, the foreign prices, the export prices are high. So this, in a way, cushions any current measures imposed.
So now, as you already started, let's go to the current situation. The current situation is very different, right? The sanctions before were targeted. Are they targeted now, or what are the main differences? Could you summarize, please?
As you mentioned, they are less targeted, let's say. So now sanctions, in a way, they are wholesale, let's call it like this. So they are, they in a way target the whole economy, the whole population of firms, and the whole population of households. What the sanctions do, they just want to make some harm to the economy. And this of course, differentiate the current situation from the last, from the previous one. The main difference is that current sanctions, they have wider scope of trade restrictions. Let's start from that. So many countries have already cut their imports from Russia. So for Russia, this will mean that the export revenue decreases. So what already done, US cut oil imports. European countries cut metal and coal imports. Europeans have already announced that they want to cut gas imports by 2/3. We will see whether this number will be reached or not. And also Europeans now discuss the oil embargo. These are trade restrictions. Another part of the sanctions is technological restrictions. And many countries banned their exports to Russia of many imported technologically developed products like IT services, like components, like some equipment for oil refineries, equipment for extraction industries, different intermediate inputs which are important for production process, like like production of wooden products or machinery industry. So many production chains in Russia are already hurted by that, because Russia was very much integrated into the world economy, and it was dependent before the war on the import of these intermediate products. And this hurts, of course, because many production processes will now be stopped, and many jobs could be lost, or some workers could be sent to unpaid leave because of that. And we already observe it. Many plants, many enterprises now stop their production within the countries, even Russian-based ones, because they just don't have intermediate products. So this is one part of the sanction. The other one is this, the withdrawal of Western companies from the country. So this is not... This is not, let's say, sanctions per se, but we call it self-imposed sanctions. So many Western companies, they decided that they don't want to continue their operations, and they withdraw their activities. They cut the investment. They stop their sales in Russia. And it means that, again, many products, many services will not be longer available. And this hurts the economy.
And these are about 600 companies, which employed, I don't remember exact numbers now, but a huge amount of workers.
They still pay salary, even if they stop the production, because
according
some companies...
According to the law, yeah, 2 or 3 months, they have to pay the salaries. Yeah. But what will happen then, we'll see.
Yeah. So, and we should, of course, mention the most, unprecedented measure is the freeze of the central bank assets, which happened a few days after the war started. This created a major financial turmoil in the economy, and the central bank had to take... had to impose capital controls to combat with the capital outflow, to stop the panics at the financial market and at the exchange rate market. But the financial crisis phase has now already finished, and the markets have stabilized. But we now live in the world of the development of the spiral of these technological sanctions and the further withdrawal of Western companies. So now situation still develops. And we can estimate the effects as of now.
And so what does your model say about the impact of these sanctions? Because their scope is much wider, right? So is your model actually able to capture it all, and what does it say?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so basically since we don't have new portions of the data as inputs for our model, which we published as Sergei working paper, we use the same model estimated before the war. And what we just did, we input there a new size of the shock, the shock to country spread. So we Anna was discussing that in 2014, the size of the shock to country spread was about, I don't know, some 2-3 percentage points. Now it is about 30, 35, 40 percentage points. So 10 times larger shock. And we just plugged it into our model and constructed what we call out of sample forecast to see what will happen with GDP, investment, consumption, and so on within by the end of 2022. And what we obtained is that GDP will decline in a range between minus 12.5 to minus 16.5%. Consumption will fall by the same magnitude mostly, but investment will fall by 30%. So it's a huge, huge decline. What will balance a little bit is that import is declining, export is rising due to record high prices, and the trade balance will rise by 60%.
According to our model. But based on the current restrictions on trade operations, we expect trade balance to stay the same under currently announced measures.
As in 2021.
As in 2021.
Yeah. And if we now reflect on these figures, they are really dramatic because over the last 30 years after the collapse of USSR, we had, I don't know, maybe five different macroeconomic crises. And this magnitude of GDP decline, about 12 to 16%, it's very much larger than the COVID-related decline in 2020. It's larger than the minus 3% decline in 2014 when the first wave of sanction was appearing. It's by two times larger than the decline of the economy in 2008 and 9, when the world witnessed the Great Recession. And it's even larger than in 1998, when Russia faced sovereign debt default. And what it is comparable to is the most acute phase of the transformation crisis in 1992, when the economy was declining by almost the same magnitude. And we all know how much dramatic was that for the population, because the economy witnessed hyperinflation and working in a formal sector of the economy was making much less sense because your salaries, they are depreciated very much fast. And you, as a worker, you want to switch from formal to informal sector of the economy. And in the informal sector of the economy, what is the best strategy is to do some home production of foods, some crops, among which, as we show in our different paper with Ella Sarkisyan, who's also a PhD in Sergei, and now is doing her research stay at University of Columbia. So we show that people indeed, they use potato growing
as a staple food to
smooth this transition crisis, the effects of this transition crisis, especially on the health of their children. And we show that if they do that in suitable areas for growing potatoes, they were really effective in coping with the crisis.
So the population has deep adaptation strategies to cope with the crisis. We think that this because the fraction of poor people will increase this time too. We expect these adaptation strategies to emerge again and start. The population will employ them to adapt to the major decline in their incomes.
This is another question I had. Can you say more about the impact that you expect on different types of people, right? Different groups, because what you suggest or what you talk about is possible in the rural areas, right? But the populations in the cities are different. So can you talk more about the different impacts and strategies to cope with the impacts?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. According to the statistics, this adaptation could also be employed in the urban areas too, because many Russians, they own their private plots called dachas around the cities. But this is only one way to how to adapt. Of course, in the urban areas, people will face, especially in those urban areas which are which have companies which are well integrated to the global economy. In these regions, people in these cities, people will face job losses. People will face wage declines. So they will be hurt more sharply as compared to the rural areas, which either have some informal jobs or a higher fraction of population work in the public sector. So the issue with the current sanctions is that they will mostly hurt those which work in the, let's say, in those integrated companies. And these people were already more likely to travel internationally, to have foreign passport, and to have access to independent information, to independent media. And that's why they were less likely to support current actions and to support Putin, to support the war. And they will be hurt mostly. While those living in the rural areas, working in the public sector or in informal sector, they mostly don't have access to independent media, or they don't want to invest their time to have this access. And that's why they mostly watch TV and rely on the propaganda. And these people, of course, among them, the fraction of poor will also increase. But as we have said already, they have these deep adaptation strategies. So it's really hard to hurt them.
What about the Russian government? Does it have any plans to support the economy? And do you think it will be sufficient to actually mitigate the impact of the current sanctions?
Well, according to the government announcement, which was made in the beginning of March, the government wants to spend about $10 billion of US dollars to support the economy. And this $10 billion should be split into two parts. $5 billion will go to support those workers who faced job losses. And another half would go to support most poor families in different aspects. And here, what is important is that even according to Russian pro-government economists, the amount of support should be at least five times larger. One of the think tanks, especially those in which we were working before SergiI, according to its estimates, only the banking system could require for maybe $3 to $5 billion of US dollars, at least, and according to stress test of the banking system. And so we see that there is no consensus even among Russian economists and pro-government economists and the government itself. And another $10 billion the government is wants to spend for supporting the financial markets. So we know that now the financial markets are frozen for the non-residents. So non-residents, they still cannot withdraw their funds. But we know, according to estimates, that the amount of funds belonging to non-residents is about maybe 10 times larger than these $10 billion of US dollars. So it still would not be enough. Once the capital control will be lifted, the non-residents will withdraw their funds, and this could again destabilize ruble and financial system. And I suspect that the central bank would not lift capital control until this terrible war is finished.
It is a major recession that your estimates are giving us. And all these sanctions and the West, what is the West trying to achieve is we want to hurt the bad guys, hurt those who are doing harm. But the second thing is we don't want to finance the war, right? We don't want to, we want to help stop the war. We want the Russia not to have enough money to finance the war. Are we getting even closer, or is it possible to achieve this goal by these sanctions? What do you think?
I think partly yes, because of course sanctions undermine the inflow of foreign currency to the economy. So if sanctions were not in place, the trade balance, as we said, would increase by 60% according to our model, while under current restrictions, we expect it to stay the same. So it means that there is some harm. This is one part of the answer. The another part is that all technological measures, they are also important in terms of stopping the war, because even military production depended on the imported intermediate goods, like chips, for example, or smart aviation, or rockets or something, or like military enterprises, they depended on some, some parts, some components. And according to the media, some production has already not possible to continue production of foreign equipment, then of course it helps. But our calculations says that current sanctions, current measures, they are not able to stop this inflow of foreign currency totally. Like they are not able to change the model of export-related activities of the Russian economy. So what they can of course decrease the amount of currency coming, but they cannot cut this revenue by 100%, cannot cut it to zero. So of course these measures, they help. Now what our estimate says that the amount of the oil embargo currently announced, plus potential European oil embargo and the cut of European imports of gas by 2/3 will decrease the export revenue by 1/4. So this is already a sizable amount of money, given that the export revenue in 2021 was $500 billion. So it cuts $125 billion of US dollar of export revenue.
And that's important. It should be stressed, right? Important. That oil and gas embargo would be able to cut only 1/4. So it's not 3/4. Because now it's a very much huge debate among economists whether it's the most efficient way to stop the war or not. So as Sergei Guriev and Oleg Itzhokin, they published a piece of research saying that these embargoes probably would be the most efficient way to stop the war. But although it is really desirable to stop the war, 1/4 seems not to be enough. That's the point. And what we need, I guess, we need really a coordination, international coordination, and maybe some reinforcement of sanctions. So even if, let's say, Turkey, China, and other Eastern countries, they do not impose sanctions themselves, but probably they should follow US and EU sanctions. And only in this case, that would be efficient. But whether they will or not follow US or EU's sanctions, only time will show. because clearly they have a trade-off, right? It's still profitable because China now gets Russian oil with a discount of 25 to 30%. That's very important because they need to recover after COVID, right? For Turkey, it's also very important given that they live in environment with high inflation and a devaluation of Turkish currency. So we'll see. It's not a it's not clear now.
Mikhail mentioned international coordination as the one way to increase the effects of sanctions. So my suggestion and or another strategy maybe to make sanctions work and to stop the war would be try to develop those sanctions that will decrease the support of the current government actions in Russia. Because what current sanctions did, unfortunately, they only increase the rating of Putin. And why it happened? Because many Russians felt themselves as surrounded by enemies, as in a fortress. And they wanted to unite around something. And unfortunately, they're united around Putin.
And those who didn't want to do that, they just escaped the country.
Yeah.
But many this maybe 300,000 thousands of people, so not that much. But
so sanctions should somehow change the support of Putin. I don't have a clear idea or a design of sanctions, but when European politicians develop this measure, they should take into account this, because I think the continuation of war really depends on the support of Putin within the country. And economical measures, unfortunately, they walk in the opposite direction, at least what we have seen by now.
No, I'm afraid that's a really huge challenge, because if these people only follow the propaganda and the local TV, then all they believe is what they are told by Putin, right? So it's very difficult to reach them in such a way that we would change their mind.
Well, let me give you an example what already was done, I think, wrongly. For example, many VPN services, they withdrew their activities from Russia. And also when Visa and MasterCard left the country, many people who wanted to use VPN, the services which allow to access independent media, when Visa and MasterCard withdrew, people could not use their cards to pay for these VPN services and they cannot access them. So in a way, some sanctions, they already worked in the opposite way, because people now will be more reliant on the government media as compared to independent ones. So maybe one way could be to provide free access to VPN and maybe to come back for Visa and MasterCard. Well,
to make sure that there is access to information, that there
exactly.
Access to more than just a local news, and fight with news rather than sanctions. That's a good idea. I think we covered the most crucial questions. I don't know if there is anything else you want to add.
Well, I would add one piece, which is that if we appeal to the case of Iran, Iranian economy, which lives under the sanctions of many Western countries starting from 1979, and lives under a complete embargo of oil and other exports from Iran, we see that the Iranian economy adapted to the sanctions, even though the Iranian economy was much less diversified than the Russian economy now is. And the financial sector adapted in a way that, okay, local people do not believe into deposits, do not trust banks, but they just bring their money into a local financial market, which is really local. It's not integrated into world financial system. And people just committed to bringing their money to stocks and bonds issued by local companies. They realized that inflation in the country is ranged between 30 to 60% each year, they adapted to that. But the life goes on and economy continues to grow, even with small paces, sometimes negative, sometimes slightly positive, but it just like leaves as an alter key, if you wish, with some help from China,
from Qatar,
from Qatar as well. Yeah, and given that the Russian economy is much more diversified, we all know about aluminium, which is used for Tesla production, for fertilizers, which are not under the sanctions now because one major Russian company holds 20% share in the world markets. And we all know that China and Turkey, they want to use cheap oil and other resources from Russia, and they can do this gray import from Russia. So now I guess that the economy will adapt and it's going to be something like, well, maybe more close than USSR, but something like USSR or even worse, like North Korea too. But it will survive. And what we really need to target is those people, which is still the portion of people who are in the margin between accepting and rejecting the regime. It's a quite huge portion of the population. They're just afraid to say no to the war because they live inside and they realize that they could be beaten, put into jail, tortured, and so on. It's a really huge risk for them. But if Western governments, other governments will think towards this direction, how to target these people and how to stop financing the war, that would be the more efficient way to prevent all these terrible events, which we all observe now.
Yes, I fully agree. And I thank you for your very informative talk. Thank you for being with us. And I hope to meet you in some better times.
Thank you for inviting us. That was a pleasure.
Thank you, Katerina. It was a very important talk. And I hope that people will hear us and it will affect somehow their decision making. And we'll soon observe the peace restored in the world. It's most important, I think.
We hope for that. Thank you.